This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. This week, we've talked a bit about business in Washington, where members of Congress just back from their summer recess are diving into a busy month debating the budget, the migrant crisis in Europe, and a big vote on the Iran nuclear deal. So let's begin there and continue our series of conversations with members of the Massachusetts congressional delegation. A few minutes ago, we spoke with Congressman Seth Moulton, who joined us from Washington. I began by asking him if he still supported the nuclear deal with Iran, which is being debated today in the Senate and the House.
I'm strongly supportive of it. It's absolutely essential that we prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. And although this is far from a perfect deal, it's the best option that we have on the table today to make sure that Iran does not get a nuclear bomb.
Right. Now, opponents, of course, will make the case that it will empower Iran, flood it with money by lifting sanctions, and give them too much ability to avoid inspections. Are you confident that they're wrong about that?
Yes, but more importantly, as opponents say all those things, they have not been able to offer a viable alternative, any pathway to a better deal. There are really just three options on the table. We either accept the deal that we have today, or we go to war immediately with Iran, and all the estimates show that that will only set them back 2 to 3 years from getting a nuclear bomb and drive the program underground. Or we try to negotiate a better deal, but the sanctions are falling apart already. So they're going to get this money anyway, regardless of whether we have the inspections that come with the deal. And if the sanctions fall apart, I just can't understand how opponents say that we're going to get a better deal with less leverage.
So, Congressman, I want to ask you about, for your take about what's going on in the House today, because I understand that a group of conservative Republicans who oppose the deal, they're claiming that the Obama administration did not properly submit the accord to Congress, did not properly disclose side agreements about inspections, and they're trying to force a vote to approve the deal, to force Democrats like you to assert your support. What's your take on this tactic?
You know, Anthony, there are a lot of things that go on down here that are really sideshows to what matters. And these side agreements are frankly a sideshow. There's a long established system of inspections with the IAEA that's been in place for decades that we've used with the Soviets and with other countries around the globe. And the way the system works is that the IAEA has agreements with each individual country. We don't disclose our agreements with the IAEA with anyone else, and it's only natural that the agreements that they have with Iran or with Russia or anyone else are not disclosed to us. So it's simply not true that the president hasn't disclosed something here, because these things are not disclosable to begin with. Mm. Look, it's frustrating that that we don't have a more perfect deal, that the prohibitions don't last longer into the future with their enrichment and whatnot. But let's not forget, this deal forever prohibits Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. We have the most intrusive inspections regime that we've ever had. In fact, I hope it doesn't come to this, but if we have to take military action, even in that worst-case scenario, we're in a far better position under the provisions of the deal than outside of it. Why? Because we'll have the international and domestic credibility to take military action, including taking a tough vote in Congress, and we'll have far better intelligence on where their facilities actually are. Hmm. So at the end of the day, this deal isn't perfect, and there are a lot of things that people can complain about, but they're really sideshows to the fundamental question before us, which is, what is the best option that we have today to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon? And I am very confident that this agreement is that best option.
Let me ask you, if I could, about the migrant and refugee crisis in Europe and what the United States needs to do. This week, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh said he'd be willing to welcome migrants in Boston. Governor Charlie Baker has also signaled his support. Do you think America should be taking more responsibility for locating migrants from places like Syria, Afghanistan, and other parts of the Middle East and Africa?
Well, first of all, I mean, the photos you see from this crisis are just absolutely heartbreaking. And it shows that these problems, these wars, these crises that happen across the globe, they start to affect other parts of the globe as well, and even us right here at home. For a long time, I've said that we need to have a strategy to defeat ISIS. We've got to have a broader strategy for the Middle East. And the reality is that because no one has stepped up with that strategy, either the United States or any of our European allies, We have a crisis in Syria that's now bubbling over into Europe and potentially into the United States. At the present time, we do have to do something to help with these refugees, but we've more importantly got to think long-term about what we can do to prevent this crisis from getting worse and to prevent it from happening in the future. And that's why we need to be engaged in the Middle East.
Yeah, but I mean, are you suggesting the need for a strategy to defeat ISIS is not there? Is that to suggest that the Obama administration has just missed this one?
I don't think we have a serious enough strategy in the Middle East, a comprehensive long-term strategy that includes the political and diplomatic sides of this fight, not just the military side. I've been outspoken about my opposition to the president's plan to simply solve the crisis in Iraq by putting American trainers on the ground there, because the fundamental problem in Iraq today is political, and you don't solve Iraqi politics by training Iraqi troops. Now, similarly, in Syria, we have an incredibly difficult, intractable situation, but we're not going to fix that just by bombing ISIS or terrorist groups. We've got to find a pathway to a political solution that can be enduring and to prevent crises like the refugee crises we see today.
In the meantime, this refugee crisis persists. Yesterday, the administration said that it would accept 5,000 more refugees into the U.S. Do you think that's enough, or does more need to be done in the short term?
It doesn't sound to me like it's enough, but we'll have to look at the numbers and see. I know that Representative Cicilline of Rhode Island has proposed 65,000 refugees, and he seems to think that that would be a more appropriate number. But there's no question that a lot of our allies have got to be involved in this effort, and we've got to coordinate with them to see what we can do together to help alleviate this crisis.
Congressman, another big issue ahead this month is that the government needs to be funded by October 1st, whether by continuing resolution or not. Republicans passed a budget that would lock in automatic spending cuts for domestic spending while increasing spending on defense. The president says he won't sign a budget like that that doesn't raise spending on both domestic and defense programs. How is this going to play out? How will Washington, and will Washington, avoid another possible shutdown?
You know, the fact that we have to worry about the United States government shutting down is sad. It's scary. And it's fundamentally why I ran for Congress in the first place, to try to get things done down here, not just shut down the government that is essential to the functioning of our country. So I'm not sure exactly where it's going to go. But one of the questions that I asked the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff when they came and testified before the Armed Services Committee in the House, is does non-defense discretionary spending, the things that the president wants to preserve, does that contribute to our national defense, or is it just defense spending? And they said that cutting non-defense discretionary spending is absolutely a risk to our national defense. Why? Because these are things like education. It's investment in the Department of Homeland Security. It's investment in basic scientific research so that we can have the edge that we do over our adversaries like Russia and China. If we're not making those long-term investments, then the short-term investments we make to buy the next plane or the next missile aren't going to keep us with the national defense that we need.
Okay, Congressman Moulton, one more question. And since we were talking about domestic spending a moment ago, yesterday President Obama continued to push for his proposal to provide 2 free years of community college. He announced the creation of a new advisory board and $175 million in apprenticeship grants by the Department of Labor. You co-authored this proposal in the House. Tell us why.
We have a great community college in the 6th District, the North Shore Community College in Lynn. And they estimate that for every $1 in federal investment that goes into North Shore Community College, they return $5 in economic benefits to the surrounding community. So this is an investment in our future. This is investment in our kids. This is the kind of investment that we need to make to ensure that America is as strong in the 21st century as we were in the 20th. So it's not just a question of doing the right thing, because investing in education is the right thing. It's a question about our future. And so I wholeheartedly support the president's proposal.
All right. Well, that's Congressman Seth Moulton. He represents the 6th District here in Massachusetts. And Congressman, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
And a quick update on the refugee crisis story. The U.S. has taken in just 1,500 Syrian refugees since 2011. But this afternoon, the Obama administration said the U.S. would accept at least 10,000 displaced Syrians over the next year.